When Janice and I got married about 11 years ago, we went through premarital counseling with some good friends of ours right before that, for a few weeks leading up to before we got married. And I'll never forget, it was about week three or so of our premarital counseling. We're sitting there, and these were a couple of good friends of ours, Dave and Karen, and they'd only been married like 2 years. So they had maybe 2 years on us that they could pass along to us. But I'll never forget, on like week three, they looked back at us, and we were talking about time and how to manage our time. And they said, when you guys get married, you need to schedule time together. Like, you need to schedule a time each week where, whether it's a date night or whether it's a time where you're going to get together and talk about issues between you, or just put it on the calendar so that you can schedule a time to spend together. I remember thinking, that is so silly. Like, I mean, we love each other. We're about to be living together. We're going to see each other all the time. Like, at that point, you know, I was in my apartment. I lived by myself. She lived by herself. We're going to be living together. We're going to be married. We're going to see each other. Like, what do you mean schedule time to spend with one another? Like, that just sounds crazy. And yet, you know, as we got married, and now we've been married for 11 years, now I begin to see what they were talking about. Because they were right, because life starts to get busy. And when you start getting in, you know, when your work gets busier, and when stuff gets busy, and you start planning stuff on the weekends, you start planning stuff on nights, you just start realizing, especially in the context of a marriage, that life gets busy. And if you don't put something on the calendar and say, we're going to spend time together, then a lot of times it's the first thing to go. And we've all learned this. And this is true whatever relationship you're talking about, whether it's a marriage relationship, whether it's relationships with friends, whether it's relationships with other family, you begin to realize that our lives get so busy and we start doing so many things, and we have so many things on our to-do list. We have so much work that's happening. We bring our work home. We're always checking email. We're always checking our phones and status updates and messages we get from people. We have so much going on in our lives that what we begin to learn, especially the older we get, is that the more busy we become, the more our relationships with those close to us begins to suffer. And that's because busyness begins to undermine relationships. It begins to threaten relationships, and ultimately busyness can destroy relationships. Now, why is that? What is it about relationships that makes busyness? I mean, why can't we just be really busy but also maintain really good and healthy relationships? And I think it's because there's a few key ingredients that go into any healthy relationship. So whatever relationship you're talking about, whether it's with a spouse, with children, with friends, with coworkers, whoever it is in your life, there's a few key ingredients that make any relationship really healthy. And here's what they are. Number one, for a relationship to be healthy, it means you are a priority in their life and they are a priority in your life. In other words, you are important to them and they are important to you. Number two, for a relationship to be healthy, it means there's going to be two-way communication. There's going to be talking. There's going to be listening. There's going to be times where you're just spending time communicating with one another. Number three, it means that there's a sense of unrushed time when you're together. In other words, when you're with that other person, again, whoever it is, it means things aren't rushed. It's more leisurely. It's okay. You're just hanging out. There's nowhere else you have to be really soon. And then number four, it means you can give them your undivided attention and they can give you their undivided attention. Now, we could probably list a whole bunch of other things, but I think at least these four things are true of any meaningful or healthy relationship. But it means that all four of these things require time and intentionality. And the busier we get in our lives, the more we lose time and intentionality. And what it begins to mean is that other things take priority in our lives, and relationships aren't a top priority anymore. We've got too many things on our to-do list, and so relationships don't become as important as they should be. It means that our communication with other people, whether it's friends or family members or things like that, starts becoming shorter. It starts becoming quicker. It starts becoming more informative. Hey, how you doing today? Here's what I'm doing. See you later. And that's it. It means that the time we spend with people isn't unrushed anymore. In fact, it's very rushed. Oftentimes, you know, you're packing things into 5 or 10 minutes, and then you've got somewhere else to go, and you've got other things to do. You're thinking about other things. It means they don't usually get our undivided attention. You ever had those relationships or those conversations with people where it seems like they're always somewhere else or thinking of all the other things that are on their to-do list? Or maybe you're that person where you're thinking of all the other things on your to-do list, or your phone's buzzing and you're always checking it, and, oh, I just got to take it this one time. I don't usually do this, but it's like every time you do that and you got to respond back to that person, it means you just can't really give that other person your undivided attention because you have gotten busy. And the truth is, the busier we get, the more our relationships with people around us begin to suffer. Now, I probably haven't said anything new. I probably haven't said anything you don't already know. In fact, many of us could say, yes, I have experienced this in my life. In fact, I've got a good friend, and I used to see her all the time, and we used to talk all the time. I used to see him all the time, and now it just seems like I never see him. Or whenever I talk to him, it's just like that, because he's always got something else going on. He's just so busy. Or maybe you'd look back at a first marriage and say, you know, our marriage didn't work out so well because we both just got too busy. Or maybe you grew up in a house where mom was too busy, or dad was too busy, and he was never around, and you always wondered, and he was always doing stuff that was supposedly helpful for the family, was supposedly beneficial for the family, but your relationship with your parents suffered because they were just too busy. Maybe you're in a marriage right now where you'd say, man, it just feels like we are just too busy. And you're beginning to understand, just like I always begin to understand, that the more busy I get, the more my relationships with people closest to me begins to suffer. Now, tonight, we're going to look at an interesting passage of Scripture. If you want to turn there, it's found in Luke chapter 10. And it's a story that illustrates, I think, this principle well. It highlights the fact of what happens in our lives when we get too busy and how we can begin to deal with that as we think about how to spend our time in our lives. So Luke chapter 10, Luke's in the New Testament. It's one of the books of the Bible that tells us sort of about Jesus' life. There are several other books, but we're going to look at Luke tonight. And starting in verse 38, now let me tell you real quickly before we get there. Sorry, you can take the verses off the screen. We always joke about that. I always say we're going to start in Luke 38 and then he puts the verse up there, and then I say, no, 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 wait, not yet. And inside joke between me and Matt. So Luke chapter 10, verse 38. Before we read it, Jesus comes over to some friend's house. Now, some of you are going to recognize the story the minute we start reading it. And that's probably because you grew up in church and you've heard this story before. If you didn't grow up in church and you've never heard this story, then you're actually a leg up on everyone else. So that's a big benefit for you tonight, because you won't know the end and you won't know how it goes and you won't immediately skip there. But it's a story about these two women named Mary and Martha. And these are women that were actually friends of Jesus. And in fact, we find out from other stories and some of the other gospel accounts that Jesus knew them pretty well. And it wasn't just Mary and Martha. They were sisters. Mary and Martha were sisters. And they also had a brother. Anyone know the brother's name?
Lazarus.
All right, Lazarus. Good. That's all the church people know the name, Lazarus. So it was Lazarus and Mary and Martha. And so they were brother and sisters. And they knew Jesus well, and it wasn't just like a casual acquaintance, like, hey, we kind of have met Jesus, or we talked to him at the door one time, or whatever. Like, they actually knew him. In fact, John tells us, says that Jesus loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Not in a general, like, Jesus loves everybody, but Jesus actually had a serious relationship and friendship with these three people. And they lived in this little town called Bethany, which was right outside of Jerusalem, just a couple of miles outside. So in this story, we find Jesus passing through the area, and so he decides to stop at his good friend's house. And this is what it says, starting in verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. And she came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." Now, before we read any further, you can just kind of picture the scene. Jesus stops at Mary and Martha and Lazarus's house. He probably has all his disciples with him. There might have been other people from the village that heard, you know, Jesus, the rabbi, the miracle worker, he's going to stop and he's going to eat, you know, at Mary and Martha's house today. And so maybe there were other people there. We don't know, but there's certainly probably a lot of people there at the house to see Jesus and to see what was going on. And so Martha is in the kitchen and she's getting things ready and she's, you know, pulling things out of the oven and making sure this dish is hot and that one's cold and cleaning the house and mopping the floor and getting everything ready because there's all these people who are going to eat and who are going to, you know, sit here and listen to Jesus's teaching in her house. Now on the other side of the house, and there were probably just two rooms in the house, houses at that time were a lot smaller than we have. There was probably one main room that was sort of like a living room where they did everything pretty much. They sat, they, you know, played. That's where they would sleep as well. They put out mats at night. And there was probably one other smaller room right next to it, and that was the kitchen, probably where they did most of the cooking and meal preparation. And so that's where Martha was doing all this work. And in the other room, Jesus begins teaching his disciples and the people that are gathered there. And Mary is sitting there listening. It says sitting at his feet, which is usually a term that they would reserve for disciples. Disciples would sit at the rabbi's feet and listen to what the rabbi or the teacher had to say. And so Mary is sitting there listening to what Jesus has to say. Now, for starters, it's a little bit countercultural because probably in that time period, it was a very, remember, very traditional culture. And so it was probably just the men in the living room listening to Jesus. And the women were sort of, you know, resigned to the place where they would go make all the preparations and do all the service, very sort of traditional culture. And so the very fact that Mary is in there with the other males, the other men, listening to Jesus, sitting at his feet, that was a pretty big sort of no-no or a pretty, you know, crossing sort of this line in that culture. And yet, it doesn't seem like Jesus tells her to leave or, you know, go take your place with the women or anything like that. He seems to think it's totally fine. But that's probably not what upset Martha. You see, Martha is in there working. She's in there getting everything ready. She's in there doing all the work. And yet at some point in all her fixing things and mopping and cleaning and all that, at some point the text says that Martha got distracted with all the things that she had to do. In the little Greek, it actually says, Martha got distracted with much serving. Those are the words that are used. With much serving. So the word serving is the same word that's used all throughout the New Testament in a very good light. It's when you serve someone else. It's when Jesus or, you know, or Paul says you need to serve one another. You need to care for one another. You need to take care of one another. So serving is a good thing. And that's what Martha's doing. She's in the kitchen. She's serving Jesus and she's serving all the people who are there. She's taking care of them. She's doing all of these things for them. And yet it says she got distracted with all of her serving. That at some point, Martha crossed a line. At some point, all the things that she was doing to serve them, she started getting frustrated by. Because at some point, Martha wasn't doing it anymore to serve them. She was doing it to serve herself. And so she had all these things she had to do. She knew she had to get all these things ready. And when she couldn't get them all done, and when things were running late, and when nobody else was helping her, and she realized she wasn't going to get through the to-do list, and she wasn't going to make everything work, when she realized that all the things she thought she needed to get done were not going to get done, she got upset, she marched in the other room, and she walks up to Jesus, and she says, "Lord, don't you care that I am in here doing all this and Mary is sitting in here doing nothing? Don't you care?" Now, I don't know this 100%. I don't know if this is 100% true. But I think this is like the only time in Scripture where someone accuses Jesus of not caring. Like someone comes up literally to Jesus, you know, the miracle worker who's healing people with leprosy, feeding the little kids, like being the most caring and compassionate guy you could ever be. And somebody comes right, a friend of his comes up to him and accuses Jesus of not caring. And we've all been in those situations where someone gets frustrated, where someone gets upset, and they're so irritated, and they walk up to someone, and they sort of blurt something out, and you know they don't really think about it before they say it, and everyone in the room kind of gets silent, and it's kind of like, uh-oh, awkward, you know, Martha just said Jesus doesn't care, you know, what's Jesus going to do? And you could almost picture it. That's what's going on. Everyone's cannot believe she just said, Jesus doesn't care. And then to top it off, she says, not only do you not care, Jesus, would you command, would you tell my sister to come in here and begin to help me out? Now, what's interesting about this is who is the guest? It's Jesus. Jesus is there as the guest. Jesus is there as the person that Martha is supposed to be serving. Jesus is there as the person that Martha is supposed to be the good hostess and the good servant for. And the very person for whom she was doing all of this stuff, she finally gets so frustrated, she comes in and she accuses him, the honored guest, of not caring about what she is doing for him. You see, I think Martha just lost it. Like she just lost her perspective. Like she was so focused on all the busy things she had to do. She was so focused on all the things she felt like she needed to get done. And then she realized she wasn't going to get them all done. And so she lost it. And she comes in and she lets Jesus have it. Well, look at how Jesus responds. He says, Martha, Martha. You can almost hear him. Martha, Martha. You know, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Now, it's a bit of strange wording, the way the second part of that verse is worded. But basically, what Jesus is saying is, look, Martha, I've kind of had my eye on you, and I can see that you've gotten focused on all these things over here, and you've lost sight of what you should really be focused on. That you have gotten focused on doing all of these things over here. You've gotten so busy and so consumed and so obsessed with getting all of these things done. And guess what? All of those things are good things. Like there's nothing inherently wrong about all of the things that you've gotten focused on. They're all good things. But you've gotten so focused on them that you've actually missed the one thing that you should be focused on. It's almost like he wanted to pull her aside and say, look, do you see what you've done? Like, do you see how you've sort of missed the boat here? Do you see how you were probably had good intentions when the day started? You were probably excited about serving me, about being there for me, about creating this great environment for everyone to feel welcome, for everyone to have good food, and for everything to be taken care of. You probably had the right intentions. And your intentions in the beginning were to serve me, but somewhere along the line, you got off track and you made the bad decision. Somewhere along the line, you lost perspective. In fact, if you had the right perspective, you would really be only focused on one thing. And guess who's focused on the right thing? And she probably hated to hear this. Maybe you should look at your sister, Mary. He goes on. He says this at the end of the verse. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, this is huge. Mary has chosen what is better. Or it could even be translated, Mary has chosen the best. In the Greek, it's the same word for better or for best. And so it could go either way. But it's almost like Jesus is saying, look, look, there are so many things you could do, and there are a lot of things that are good, and you've chosen to focus on a lot of things that are actually good. But guess what? There is something that's more important right now. There's something that's actually better than the focus that you've got. And your sister Mary has chosen it. You see, if we could walk up to Mary and say, Mary, why did you choose to do that? Mary would probably say, you know what? There are a lot of things to do, and there is a lot of stuff going on, and I realize there's a lot of urgent and pressing needs right now in the kitchen, and there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen, but Jesus is in our house. Like, how many opportunities do we get to hang out with Jesus? And so I just been sitting in there listening to Jesus. I got to hear some of his thoughts. I got to listen to him tell some stories. I got to share with him some things that are on my heart. And he listened to me. See, I think Jesus would look at Martha and he would say, she's chosen the right thing today. It's not that all of those other things are terrible. It's not that they're all bad. It's that your sister actually just chose the right thing. And then he finishes the verse by saying, and what she's chosen will not be taken away from her. Now, what does that mean? I think it means that if we could ask Martha, you know, hey, Martha, in all your business and all the stuff you're doing, if someone could come to you 24 hours from now and ask you, what have you gained from all this stuff that you've done today? How would you answer that? And Martha would probably say, not a whole lot. I mean, there was stuff I had to get done, but I don't know if there's anything long-term I would say I've gained from all the tasks I got done. And if we were going to Mary and say, hey, Mary, if someone were to come to you tomorrow or next week or next month and ask you, what have you gained from today? What would you say? She would probably say, I got to hang out with Jesus. Like, I learned some things about God that I never knew. I learned some things about me that I never knew. Yeah, there's so much that I took away from today. And those kind of things can never be taken away from me. See, I think Jesus would look at Martha and he would say, you want to know how to spend your time? You want to know how to know what's most important? You want to know how to know what's the best thing? Think about the long-term implications. Days from now, weeks from now, months from now, what will you gain from the things that you're investing your time in? Now, here's the challenge that I think this story presents to all of us. I think we are really, really busy people. And I know many of you, I don't know all of you, but my hunch is that every single one of us, if I was to ask you today, are you very busy in your life? I'm guessing almost every one of us would raise our hands and say, yeah, life is pretty busy right now. And if someone was to come to me and say, you know, as a pastor, what do you think is one of the biggest problems in people's lives today? What do you think is one of the biggest problems in your own life today? I would probably have to say, I think it's busyness. I genuinely think we lead such busy lives that most of us don't even realize it, but it's destroying our lives. It's the reason that most of us get burnt out. It's the reason that many of our relationships sort of fade and peter out because so many other things take precedent. It's the reason that many of our families get strained or become dysfunctional. It's the reason that many of us get to the end of a day or the end of a month or the end of a year and just feel like, what did I do this year? I felt like I was just spinning my wheels for another year and I just don't even know if I've got anything I can show to accomplish, anything I've accomplished to show for it over the last year. I think the reason is because so many of us are so darn busy. We have so many things. We've taken on so many things. We've filled up our schedules with so many things. And the thing that suffers the most when we become busy is our relationship with other people, our relationship with the people who are close to us, and ultimately our relationship with God Himself. So how busy are you? Are you too busy in your life? Let me close with sort of just giving three almost summary statements to unpack this story a little bit and to challenge you a little bit. Number one, When we get busy, we often convince ourselves that everything we're doing is absolutely necessary. But there's often something unseen that drives us. In other words, if you would have stopped Martha at any moment and said, "Why are you doing all this stuff?" I'm sure she would have looked back at you and said, "I'm doing it for Jesus. Like, Jesus is in our house, so I'm doing all of this for Him." To which we might say, "Well, but you just walked in and like went off on Jesus. Like, the very person that you're supposedly doing this for, you're not really doing it for. There must be something else that's driving you." And I think the same is true in each one of our lives. So I'd ask you the question, what is it that's driving you? What is it that's driving all of us to make our lives so busy? And until we ask that question, until we identify what it is deep down that's actually driving us to be so busy, I don't think we'll ever get a hold of this issue in our lives. So I'd love to come to you tomorrow at work when you're still there at 5:30 or 6:30 or 7:30 and ask, like, "Why are you still here? Like, what's, you know, no, I know you've got work to do today and a project that has to be done tonight, but no. Deeper down, like, what is actually driving you to stay so late at work every day?" Or maybe if I was to look at your, you know, calendar or your schedule and see that you've got stuff like planned every single night or every single weekend, or like you've got trips planned for the next, you know, 3 months, and I was to ask you, what's driving that? Like, why do you feel like your entire schedule has to be so like filled up? Like, what is it deep down inside that's driving your need for busyness? Or if I was to come to you and say, "You know, why is it that you check email so much at home at night?" And I can ask all these questions of myself, so I'm not just getting on you. But why is it that we check email so much at night? Why is it that we do so much work at home? Why is it that we have so many things going on in our lives that our conversations with the people that we have relationships with end up being sort of these passing, "Hey, how you doing? I'll see you later. We'll catch up some other time." What is driving us? Until we answer that question, I don't think we're going to be able to deal with this in our lives. Number two, when we get busy, activity always takes priority over people. When we're busy, activity is always going to take priority over people. That as the level of activity goes up, as your schedule fills up, as you have more and more stuff going on, your relationships will suffer. Janice and I were just talking about this last night, and we see it in our own lives. As I get more and more busy, and as I see more and more stuff happen, it makes it harder and harder on our relationship. And it's good stuff. Like, I'm a pastor. Like, I'm doing, you know, good stuff. I'm taking some classes at school. I'm getting educated. You know, I need to make some more money over here, so I'm doing things to provide for my family. You know, I've got hobbies that I enjoy that are good. I mean, it's all good stuff. But as the level of activity goes up in our lives, it's going to undermine our relationships with other people. And we've got to come face to face with that truth and realize that that's the case and continue to ask ourselves, how is my busyness undermining my relationships, not just with family, with friends, with roommates, with coworkers, with all the people in our lives? Number three, much of what we do is measurable in the short run, but it is neither measurable or memorable in the long run. So much of what we do is measurable in the short run, but it's neither measurable nor memorable in the long run. So think about all the stuff that we've filled our lives up with and ask yourself the question, 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, 2 years from now, is all this stuff going to matter? Like, are there things I'm doing in my life that really don't matter long term? Because again, I think if Jesus talked to Martha, she would say, "Well, yeah, I've got to do all these things." And Jesus said, "No, wait a second. Mary's made the good choice. She's realized that there's one thing that's going to pay off long term, and it's spending time with me." So we've got to ask ourselves, are we too busy? Guys, are we too busy? I mean, if you're a guy, let me just pick one more thing. Yeah, I've got one more minute to pick. If you're a guy and you're married and you've got kids, I mean, are you too busy for your family? Because if you ask most of us why we're so busy, we'd probably say, well, it's because I'm working so much, I'm doing all this stuff because it's for my family. Like, I'm doing this so my wife doesn't have to work. I'm doing this so we can live in a decent house. I'm doing this so my kids can, you know, have cool toys. I'm doing this so eventually my kids can go to college, so I'm trying to put some money away for that. But is that really why we're doing it? And my hunch is if you asked any of our kids, would they rather have a dad who's doing all that so that we can put money away so they can maybe go to college someday? Or would they rather have a dad who's there, who spends time with them? We got to take that seriously. Whether you're a parent, whether you're married, even if you're not, why are we so busy? We've got to start asking ourselves that question. We can't be driven by what's urgent. We've got to be driven by what's most important. So what's most important in our lives? It's the people who are in our lives. And it's God. So what are we doing to use our time wisely? I'm excited. Jason's going to hopefully have a voice next week. And he'll come back and unpack some of this and talk a little bit more. How do we set the right priorities? And in a couple weeks, I'm really excited. He's going to give some insight about what can we actually practically do to spend our time in such a way that it does prioritize people in our lives and it prioritizes God in our lives. But don't leave tonight without asking the question. Maybe it's asking it on the car ride home with whoever you came with. Maybe it's over dinner. Maybe it's later tonight or sometime tomorrow. But just ask somebody else, hey, am I too busy? Like, is busyness doing something in my life that I need to do something about? It's a question we can't afford not to ask. So let me close this in a word of prayer, and then the band's going to come up, and we're going to wrap up with a final song. God, it's so easy for us to get caught up in so many things that are going on in our lives. And I confess that I just do that too often. And so I pray for all of us in this room who are a little bit more task-oriented. I pray that you'd help us to focus and prioritize relationships in our lives. For those of us who have too much going on at work, help us to figure out a way to lighten the load. If some of us have to make radical decisions, help us to make radical decisions. If some of us just have to maybe fine-tune some things, give us the courage to fine-tune some things. And Lord, ultimately, just help us out. Help us trust you. Because ultimately, it just seems like it's a matter of trust. I don't trust that I can get everything done. And if I don't get everything done, somebody doesn't like me, or somebody doesn't approve of me, or somebody doesn't accept me. And that's just a lie. So help us not believe those lies, and help us to trust you. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for loving us, whether we get stuff done or not. Thank you for being our Redeemer and our Savior. I pray all this in your name.